Hello, folks. Big news. We now have a Patreon. So for £5, £7, or £10, you can support us and get some audio commentaries, early access to podcast episodes, a monthly Q&A, and everything in between there. So go over to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback on the Patreon and see what all the fuss is about.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good.
Ooh, sounds good.
Hello, welcome to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback, wrote through the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, and the creamy middles of The Simpsons seasons 1 to 12, the random episode generation. I'm, of course, your host, Tom McRae, and joined with me is my good co-host, Cal Reader, and I feel invigorated, like I've got that super, you know, Captain America serum there. I've officially booked my second COVID vaccine jab there. I'll become, you know, final form Freezer, or, you know, have a Super Saiyan 3 kind of vibe to me. Ready for my big jet-setting holiday to Sheffield.
Bill Gates will be watching your porn and stuff like he doesn't already. But no, I guess. Everybody get their bloody vaccine thing. This natural immunity is good, but it's not as good as the synthetic shit.
Cow. Minus bragging about vaccines and that. How goes you, friend?
I do good, bud. I'm doing fine. I'm kind of running on the hype of finishing my theory, driving theory, which I passed, which was good. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing very good. To date the episode a little bit. Actually, I tell a lie, Tyler. I'm a bit pissed off. It's been terrible weather for the last 6 weeks here in rainy Sheffield. Miserable, rainy, kind of been like a few thunderstorms and stuff as well. So I decided to invest in a nice umbrella. And it's about, comes up to about my waist. It's got like a hook hilt. And it's like, it's massive. It's big enough for like two people. So like me and the missus could like go and walk in the rain and have like a nice little, you know, power strut if I wanted, like a pimp strut. And as soon as it's come, it's not fucking rained, has it? Like every time, it's supposed to be like 20 degrees over the weekend, over the bank holiday, so I'm not going to be using it. I told my friend, I bet it'll never rain for the rest of the year. And he was just like, I can confirm that it will definitely rain by the end of the week or anything. So apart from that, I'm doing quite well. What about yourself, my dude, other than being drugged up on Pfizer vaccine goodness joy?
Well, I think you'll find I'm drugged up on life and the AstraZeneca. It's the powerful combo.
This episode sponsored by vaccines.
Honestly, I've just been doing normal work and I've been raiding the PSN store, everyone. I'll finally be able to dive into Shenmue 1 and 2, slight remasters. And there's just loads of other stuff that's on big 70-80% off and that. What's another one? There's like a Rick and Morty produced kind of game.
Oh, yeah.
Trover Saves the Universe there. So I'll be diving into that at some point as well. And it just seems to be all, you know, just all coming to an end as soon as I'm about to be away from my flat for a week. It's just incredibly convenient. But what are you like on the consoles or your media consumption there? Anything new?
I'm predominantly a PC gamer, really, myself. I do have console, I have a PS4 as well. I'm slowly getting into it a little bit more. I don't really utilise it as much as I should. So I've been playing a bit of Ghost of Tsushima online. I'm looking to use my PS4 a bit more. So any recommendations, dear viewers, or dear Tyler, please keep it to yourself, because I don't respect your opinion, but you know.
The episode we're reviewing today is Bart Gets Famous from Season 5, Episode 12, directed by Susie Dieter, written by John Swartzwelder, with the original air date being February the 3rd, 1994, and the couch gag being the family collide and they run to the couch and they end up becoming a big, massive blob there. Now, as I always say, Cal, Any particular nostalgia or memories from this one here?
It's a good episode. There's actually, it hits close to home, if I'm honest, Tyler. Not because I was briefly famous. It's because there's a box factory round the corner from my house.
Oh, no way.
It's not as, I know, it's not as thrilling as the one, local to here. But I remember I bought boxes before when I was in college. Because when I did a practical course, I did a film and TV course, and one of the things we did around Christmas was I dressed in drag, and we did like a music video where we had to do like, you know, half dress in drag. I wanted to dress in drag, which kind of says more about me.
I remember you putting this on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
It's in the annals now.
It is. But yeah, so when there's a part of that video where I jump out of the window, I jump out of some cardboard boxes. So I went to the thing and I had to kind of explain to the guy who was just like, how big do you want the boxes? I was like, to kind of like fit me in them. And he was like, what do you mean? I was just like, oh, I'm a college student. I'm quite young. I was just like, yeah, just, you know, to fit a person in them, where I'll be able to jump out as like a surprise. And he was just like, yeah. probably these ones here. And I was like, yeah, cool, can I get three? He's like, yeah, sure. But yeah, it's, and that's my whole interaction with this random box factory type thing around the corner from my house.
Oh right. You made it sound like he was glaring at you with shame, but it was just like a functional.
It was more kind of like confusion, but also not the most confusing thing. He's probably being asked what can go in a box. I feel like he's probably, I don't know, helped a few people get away with murders and shit like that, maybe. Because he was just like, yeah, you're probably not going to want this one. You could probably get this one instead. It'll be a bit bigger for you. I was like, oh, cool.
Is it a size 9 or a size 10 course? Ah, size 10, you want to go with this bad boy? Myself, I did like it. It's a solid episode, but I expected to laugh more. I wasn't in love with it there.
Mm.
I do really like the themes of the episode, though, and I mean, the box factory itself's one of my absolute favourite parts, which I will get into. And I was able to relate to some of this because I've done volunteering for a local film festivals and children's media festivals, which I'll get into there, and all the wonderful positive and toxic experiences along the way there. How we kick off this episode is, well, like I said before, it's quite, well, to me it's flat, but to others they'd say it's very functional there. You get Bart, you know, he's ready to go to school, and he's got a field trip on, but he doesn't know where. I will say, the only bit of this I did like was this very, very start where Homer's reading the papers going, oh, it's my horoscope, today's like any other day. Oh, it just keeps getting worse. Like, oh, did the Simpsons predict, you know, lockdown living and working from home? As the BuzzFeed writers, you know, drool and try to get that into their shit articles. I resonated with that, but like the rest of it didn't, you know, didn't really make me laugh at the start here, Cal.
The only thing what I'm like concerned about is you don't know the trips you're going on before. You've not had to sign like a permission slip or anything like that. Like, you know, it's
that's a bit of an odd one, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, fair enough. It works. It kind of works for the surprise of the episode. I do enjoy Lisa's little kind of like daydream, which just ended in fucking murder.
Yeah, impaled on her Nobel Peace Prize. How ironic. We're able to kick off this episode proper now. We're at Springfield Elementary and all the kids are hyped. Where are they going to go? And Skinner's there along with Edna. Oh, hello, children. Can any of you tell me what this is? And Edna's just cutting through all the shit. Oh, Christ, Skinner, not the box factory. All the kids. All the kids are severely disappointed. And then this is where it absolutely picks up for me now. And Bart even, you know, thinks of Lisa. Oh, I'll just be like Lisa and escape into fantasy there. And What kind of vivid, wild imagination can he dream up with this field trip, Cal?
Instead of the box factory, we're going to the box factory.
It's the exact same animation, just a disappearing box and then a reappearing box again. I like the detail of how into it Martin and Skinner are. Like, the biggest nerds. The biggest kid nerd and the biggest adult nerd dweeb there is there. A shotgun laughed at... did you catch when they were getting off the bus and Skinner does a little...
Yeah.
A little excited little sound. that's so much better. There we go. In between that, you get them passing Toyland and Firework Land and Slide Land, and even Edna's wanting a bit of the action, just not the dreary fucking box factory there. I've said it many times now. This picks up for me now, Cal.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's it kind of the mundanity of it just really works well. It's very nice.
Spoilers, folks. The box factory is my entire favourite bit of the episode there, and I'll cut in a few clips of, you know, what are the best examples of that. But what's your most mundane job? What's the job you're glad you left, Cal, there? Any particular, you know, horrifyingly boring experiences?
I went from working in like a mainstream kind of coffee shop in the UK, Costa. I went from working there in the middle of a mall as well, so it's quite a busy atmosphere, to a independent shop, which I will not name because I don't want to give them good advertisement because they ended up sacking me. it was small, and it was either ridiculously busy to the point where, because they were only, but it was only busy because it was so small. There were only about 6 tables in there. So if it was on a weekend, for example, when people were having brunch and such, it would be ram-packed. And people would come and be like, can I get a table? And I'm like, are you fucking joking? We haven't got like a side table on in the back. When will it be busy? When will it be free? I was like, you're just going to have to come back in like 20 minutes and check. And if it is, we'll be able to help you out. If it isn't, it's not. Or... it was so fucking dead, and because I didn't necessarily get on with the staff members as well, there'd only be 2 of us on shift, and they'd be like, oh, you know, we'd clean a little bit, and it'd be okay. All right, so what do you want to do? Well, we can clean again. I'm like, I've already cleaned, and I'd go 8 hours on some days, barely saying a word, because we'd serve literally a few people in the morning, some mainly coffee from like, because it was like a tattoo parlor around the corner. I once saw you actually. Yes. You were just finishing Quidditch, and I just finished work, and I think it was you'd not long started Quidditch. But that was probably the worst job I'd ever had. I just switched myself off. I was just like, I can't. For 6 to 8 hours, I'd just literally switch off and just not fucking do anything. There was nothing to do. It was terrible. But what about yourself?
As far as like mundane jobs, I've had like monotonous jobs before, but the pay was quite good at the time for my age. So like, I put that on hold, and also I made the job fun. Well, the people around me were fun, but... my absolute worst was I briefly worked in a Witherspoon's when I was doing my second college course there. I only did it for about a month or so, or maybe 2 months, because I was working during the week and it was always 6 till 12. And then thankfully I was only collecting glasses at the weekend, but it just got so busy on a Saturday night and I just didn't want to fucking work it. And also just all the regulars were horrible, and it's icy and a load of racist old men, and it just wasn't fun. You're just constantly rushing round. You only got like a 20 minute break for like 6 hours, not even 30, and it was just, it's horrible. No one worked for Witherspoons. It's a real shite cunt of an organisation there.
This
Tim's a right wanker.
That just reminded me as well, the job while I was on my first shift, because I just basically wanted to leave Costa. I was just like, yeah, fuck it, I'll go for the first place, what we'll do it. And they were like, I really impressed them in the interview. And then when the first shift came, and I was just like, oh, so when's my break? And like, this is where it should have been like a telltale kind of thing, because the owner, who was only, I was 22 at the time, she was 23, and she got the cafe gifted to her for her 21st birthday. And
what?
So she didn't know how to run a business. She wasn't a good people person or anything like that. And like, she was Greek, but like, and people would kind of like excuse her rudeness for her being foreign. And I was like, no, she's just a bitch. Like, anyway, and this should have been a telling point when both her mother, and she looked at her mother and she was like, oh yeah, we don't really do breaks. And I was just like, ha, but legally I'm working 6 hours. I'm entitled to a 15-minute break or a 20-minute break. So it's just like, yeah, we're just kind of eating between things. I was just like, nah, I'm getting my break. And I couldn't really go anywhere else. I had to have, like, their food, which is fine because the food was really good. If I would have known, you know, in hindsight, you just think, I wish I would have fucking rinsed them. If I would have took them to the small claims court, because they sacked me because they couldn't afford me, which is fine. But... And it was like, we'll give you... You had 2 holidays. But because I didn't sign a contract, I couldn't kind of like... I was done. Whatever. Next time, I need to make sure I get a contract signed and shit. But it is what it is. Anyway, sorry. Also, COVID fucking killed the cafe. Anyway, which was hilarious.
The story of how 2 brothers and 5 other men... parlayed a small business loan into a thriving paper goods concern is a long and interesting one. And here it is. It all began with the filing of Form 637/A, the application for a small business or farm. Many interesting and important things have been put into boxes over the years. Textiles, other boxes, even children's candy.
Do any of these boxes have candy in them?
No.
Will they ever?
No, we only make boxes to ship nails. Any other questions?
When will we be able to see a finished box, sir?
Well, we don't assemble them here. That's done in Flint, Michigan.
Have any of your workers ever had their hands cut off by the machinery?
No.
And then the hands started crawling around and tried to strangle everybody?
No, that has never happened.
And he popped eyeballs.
I'm not sure what kind of factory you're thinking of. We just make boxes here. This room is the most popular part of our tour.
It's just like the other rooms.
Yes, but with one important difference. Oh, we took that out. Yes, it is just like the other rooms.
What's that building over there?
That's just a TV studio where they film Krusty the Clown and other non-box-related programs. Since it has nothing to do with boxes, I'll just shut these blinds.
The Box Factory. I love this one-off character. I love the owner. He's just so boring and nasally. I just even love the way he pronounces it. Oh, boxes. We make nothing but boxes here. And my all-time favorite line in this whole thing is him going, oh, this is the best part of the tour. In this room is nothing like the other rooms. Oh, it looks exactly the same, except for one difference. Oh, we got rid of that. Yes, it's like every other room. And he's, and I've known, like, a few bosses that, like, really drink the Kool-Aid, and I'm like, yeah, like, you have to say that because it's a corporation, but surely there's, like, you can admit to the shite parts of even your own store. Oh, no, wow, you're really in this. It's like a cult. It's insane. And that happened particularly for a high street fashion shop, which I won't mention because fuck them. Have you known any bosses that, you know, have drunk the Kool-Aid, like, oh, Beanie's coffee shop is better than all the other franchises there? There's no...
I've worked with a few managers who... There were one who, you said you worked in, like, shops and stuff. You know, like, your login cards, like... open up the till and shit, yes, to be able to like serve it and stuff like that. So like I used to go, I went through about 6 or 7 of them, because you just had to, they always used to break. I don't know what I was doing with him, but they'd always break. But this one woman, she had every card what she ever had owned, as well as every badge. And every, like, you used to get, like, little beams badges to kind of, like, confirm that you could do certain, like, latte art and stuff like that.
Yes.
And she had literally everything still on, like, a board in her house, like, signed up. And you're, like, with any coffee shop or anything like that, you'll only ever get, like, three types of clientele working for them. You'll either get young people who are just going through university / like finishing college. You'll get the young people who've been trapped in it to the point where they've gone into management, or you get the really old people who are a little bit quirky and a bit weird. Sometimes they're like foreigners, sometimes they're just weird quirky people who don't really know what else to do with their lives, but get so committed and so loved up to it. Any coffee shop, that's all you'll get. There's three types of people. You'll never get that.
Folks.
Exactly. Bingo. Carl's bingo. But we in my current job, there's a few people like that. They're not. There's things that I'll tell you off air. What's happened? But as of recently, more, and they've kind of drunk the Kool-Aid. Where they haven't, they're not seeing between the lines, really. But I'll tell you, Tyler, later after this episode.
Oh, Tyler, cut here. That coffee shop, was it in Walkley?
Yeah.
Was it called? What was
Alyssum.
It called?
Alyssum Cafe Bistro.
Oh no, that's not the one. One of the girls I've seen from, because there was a girl I've seen from Quidditch. She would work. On a Walkley cafe, but it's not that one.
No. There was literally like four members of staff.
Right.
It was really weird because people would either be there for like, because it'd only been there for 2 years, either people were there from the beginning or they had like a big turnover of staff because the managers would treat people like shit. And this one girl called Kitty, she put in a 2 weeks notice because she was going to Manchester to go to university. And she gave her zero. She cut all her shifts to spite her, and she went, "No, you fuck it. You're not working here." And she did one shift, and that were it. And then everyone who left there was just like, "Yeah, she was just a monster to fucking work with." But her cafe's shut down now, so it's hilarious. I don't care.
But realise, I'm getting out of this boring old sack of shit there. So he thinks he's in an old comedy film. He spots a laundry basket and it's the perfect escape. Get the nice build up in music as well. And he's in there. And then I'm pretty sure this was happening in real life as well. No one's touching it. He's just easier going out of the exit. And he's away. And he makes his way over to Krusty Lou Studios. And there's a nice interaction with the security guard as well, Cal.
I forgot about this one, actually. It was quite funny. It's literally like, "Excuse me, young man, do you work here?" It's like, yeah. "Oh, well, go straight ahead."
This is where we get Bart on the lot of a Krusty Lou studio here. And everyone's running around for scripts and all producers are talking with each other there. And we get to see behind the scenes of Bumblebee Man there. And it turns out he's this method Shakespearean actor. Like an Atkinson or a Hugh Laurie type there. And I like the director's voice. It's very...
What's his love? Are you okay? Very like lovey-dovey kind of...
Yes, I'm trying to think of the... He's the carry-on actor. He's always camping it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's the matter, love? Yeah, it's a wonderful voice there.
I'm going to say Victor Meadrew, but that's not...
He gets to see behind the scenes of that, and he also gets to see Ellen DeGeneres. I mean,
Kenneth
Krusty,
Williams.
Abusing a bit of Kenneth Williams. Thank you, Cal. That's who I was thinking of. Yeah, so what a wonderful man. Great comedic actor. Everyone look up his stuff in the Carry On films there. We get Ellen DeGeneres. I mean, Krusty, abusing staff there, saying, "If he doesn't have a Danish, then you're gone there." And I don't want this to become a tangent there, but what the fuck's become of Ellen DeGeneres now, Cal? It's just finally all the shit's come out and she's actually losing a show. Well chuffed.
I heard shit about this for years from like interviews of people who just hate, like comedians, what I liked, who were just like, Ellen's this really horrible person to be around. Also James Corden as well. I've heard not very good things about him, but I've heard he's not as bad as he used to be. Which, take as you can. I can't condone James, I can't even figure his name now. I refuse to remember his name. He's good as Smithy, and that's it. And like everything else.
Well, that's it. Everyone's like, we'll take you for Gavin and Stacey. Thank you, but now please piss off.
He's just, yeah, exactly. That's it. I can't condone him being like a corporate shell of like whatever he is.
If you're part of a small abuse community, what's a good thing to do? Make friends with a war criminal.
What?
Did you not see that photo of her with George Bush at a baseball game?
He can't call George Bush a war criminal. He's, you know, lots of things, but he did the best he could.
Yeah, like Blair, they're good buddies, they're fine. And in the meantime, the kids and Principal Skinner, everyone else, are, you know, busy trying to call Bart. Where the hell has he gone now? And we get a little phone calls to home. Marge tries to get the phone, hangs up. Homer's also been in the shower, and like, this is a meme, but I don't see why it's been such a big meme. You know, you'll have to speak up, I'm wearing a towel. Well, I've seen that get used a lot, but it's not my most favourite of memes, Cal.
It's yeah, I've said it myself. I just find it really funny, because it's just so dumb. Like, it's just, it's the equivalent of just like, people saying I'm getting my hair washed, or whatever, I can't come, you know. It's dumb, it's fun, it's just, we've all been in that situation where we've just missed an important call because we've been in the shower or whatever. Like, I guess it's not as important anymore, but obviously now everyone's got their fucking phones on them all the time. But
and also, I guess I'll just cover the whole box factory bit here. Homer catches wind of it there, and oh my god, just 0 to 100 here with Dan Castellaneta. And he also did the box factory owner. So just knowing the mundanity of that, and then Homer's coming in, absolutely bollocks. What do you mean you're lost? And, oh, just Skinner's frightened little face. Could have fallen into one of these machines. And then we see Bart's lucky red hat on a box, and then he just assumes that he's now a box his whole life there. He's Soylent Greened his son there.
I mean, fair play to Homer. Amazing. For just accepting him as the as a box, you know?
Mean you lost him? He might have fallen into one of these machines. Oh my god, that's his lucky red hat. He's a box. My boy's a box. Damn you, a box.
Bart overhears Krusty being abusive and wanting a Danish, and so he comes across Kent Brockman there going through you know what his script's gonna be there. And I mean, fuck me, you talk about Daily Tsunami Mail editorializing. Jesus Christ, what happens, Cal?
So there's been a tsunami in France. To which he hears, yoink, yoink. And he looks, and he's Danish. He's pre-show Danish. He's gone.
Also as well, folks, if you haven't seen on Twitter and that, at TylerTMC, I did a nice little meme of this. I think I even put it on board posting for everyone to see, Cal. But I think people are using this as a template, like replacing the Danish with something.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up sticking in Mark Corrigan from Peep Show. Do you know that? Oh my God, a sausage is missing. I did that, but with the Danish there. Oh my God, Kent, look, a Danish is missing. Has he just got to carry his food around now, like a prisoner?
A sausage has gone! Oh my god, Jeremy, a sausage is missing!
I do get it, though. We've all been in that situation, especially when you've been fancying something, and then all of a sudden it's just, you know, it's gone. Some fuckers have stolen it. I tend to do this quite a bit with food, like what my sister likes, by accident, just eating stuff where she's gone, oh yeah, you can have a slice of pizza, and I don't take that literally, and I have about 6 slices of pizza, and then, you know, we've all been in that situation.
Bart hands Krusty the Danish, and he's elated there, and nice bit of callbacks as well. He goes, oh, you know, I'm Bart Simpson, I got your career back on track there. I reunited you with your strange father. Don't you remember anything? Oh, what have you done for me lately? I got you that Danish. And I'll never forget. A reference that I knew as a kid because it got parodied so many times in a lot of the cartoons I watched there. Do you know where the "Hey kid, catch" and the big towel comes from?
Big Mean Joe.
Famous football tough man, Joe Green there, showed a bit of heart when he gets a Coca-Cola and then throws the kid his beloved t-shirt there. And I'm hoping that's how he ended up and he didn't become like killing his wife or something or doing drugs like a lot of NFL players doing. So I'll just retain that nice coke ad in my head and not deal with the realities that probably happened. With Bart catching that towel, Krusty says, "Oh, I need you to clean it your yachts because you're my new personal assistant." And a long first act, but a great little cut to break here. We see Kent being a pissy diva.
It's my favourite part because I've been in that. Sweet. You know, a bit hungry. It's you know, your favourite foods has been gone, and he's just sat there. News is on.
Yeah, I know I'm on, but I don't care. I don't read the news until I get my Danish. Go ahead, try to find a replacement.
A powerful tidal wave in Kuala Lumpur has killed 120 people.
Hey, Chihuahua! Whoa, whoa, whoa!
You hear a running sound. And good old Bumblebee Man, the thespian, coming up and nails it. Now says, "Oh, and it's been hundreds died in the flood of the tsunami in Lollapunka." Hey, caramba!
Hey, you got to get that gimmick, and you got to give the people what they want, Cal.
Exactly.
Venturing out, but they love the old stuff. We're into Act Two now, and Homer's with his quote son now, and is ready to break the horrible news to Marge. And then Bart comes walking in, and he just completely drops it. Nothing. And Bart even recognises it's a 8-side double corrugated box there, and he goes, "Oh well, you know, box making's the dream, but now I've got a sweet gig as Krusty's personal assistant there." Marge isn't quite sure about this new career path there. Lisa's even saying, "Oh, you know, well, I'll end up working with the homeless at the weekends there." And Homer talks about his very first gig. You know, he was a street performer. Oh, well. I love it when they go back to old Homer. It's just the digs and the hair and everything, and the voice Castellaneta does. I will say, the whole performance is horrible, but that's a funky, fresh lick that he's got going on with the guitar. That's perfect. It's just everything else around him there. Have you ever seen, like, these sort of one-man bands there? Like, I know we've seen all kind of street performers, the silver talentless fucks there that are just statues. Or have you ever seen those, like, weird Yodas in London where it's just a fella that's like floating? And it's all just through the cane that he's clearly just sitting on there.
It's I've seen a few. I've not as drastic as, like, with the full massive drum thing in actual person. I've seen a few where they've got just like a tambourine or something like that, or they're like, they will he had two cymbals between his knees and they'll do that. I've seen that before. But whilst I've been playing guitar. What about yourself? Have you seen anything to that extreme?
I'm just trying to think. I've seen, not musically, but I've seen fellas like juggling chainsaws and flames and all that, which is really cool. I don't know how else to parlay it, but the biggest scam ones I've seen is, have you ever, and I've definitely seen this on the Moor Market and on Leeds High Street and all of the other cities, have you seen the fellas that will do sand dogs?
Sand dogs? What's that?
It's you'll get gentlemen just turn up like right at the start of the day, and they've been carving stuff out of sand, and it's always these dogs, but it looks like it's like, you know, that perfect cardboard you get out of like egg cartons.
It looks
suspiciously like that, but they're always about to be finished. They've always done the head in immaculate design, but no one's ever seen one actually getting made or, you know, shaped. And I've tried to go on a big Reddit hunt for this, and like, there's no proper answer. It's like no one's ever seen a baby pigeon. No one's ever seen a sand dog getting properly made at the start. It's like one of life's big mysteries.
Sand dog. I've never even heard of it before. I'll have to keep an eye out. Oh, I've seen... Yeah, I've just Googled it. I get what you mean. I'll have to keep an eye out at it. I kind of... Part of me... If I was a meaner person, I'd walk through it just to see...
Oh, yeah.
If it is actually sand.
Yeah, you've got that base impulse to be like, oh, I could actually just fuck this if it's not genuine. Bart's got his first day on set there and he's talking to, you know, one of the grips, one of the hands, saying, oh boy, you must love this every single day. This is like a dream. Oh, I wish I was dead. And I suppose you like that with any kind of dream job, you know. I'm sure hell, Cristiano Ronaldo has shite days at the office where it's all monotonous there, or you know, your big actors thinking, oh Christ, I've got to go through that line for the 17th time there, Cal. I'm sure it happens to everyone.
I think so. I think, you know, there's that saying, isn't there, where it says, if you enjoy your job, you'll not work a day in your life, or something like that. I don't agree. I think it's just, I think, like you said, everyone has those days where you're just kind of like, I can't be arsed. I'm just going to mentally switch off for 8 hours, and I'll wake up around lunchtime. And then I'll clock off, you know. I've been working at work, like, the referral queue, which is basically when, if on the call, they couldn't find the answer, so they decided to put it in for someone to look over it. A lot of times where it's specifically not a complex query, I tend to look at the time of when it was posted, and 9 times out of 10, it's usually like 5 minutes before close, or, you know, around lunchtime, and you're like, I know what you're doing. Like, I've done it. I think we've all done it.
Bart ends up realising that, oh, this personal assistant Lark's, you know, it's not what I signed up for here. There's a load of dog's body shit jobs there, cleaning up crusty spew in the toilet. I'm trying to find a candlestick without prints to meet him in the conservatory there. And it took me, like, the last time I watched this, like, 2 years ago to realise that is a massive Cluedo reference. Just because, yeah. I assumed, oh no, he has actually killed someone. He has, but I just never put it together. It's the campy film and the favourite board game as well. My personal favourite is Bart beating Krusty's signature there. And just the sweet little girl and the, I love you, Krusty, over there. Just completely checked out what you've been saying before, Cal. And he crosses the line when he gives Mel a cheese sandwich there, and he's having a right go at him in his Blackadder thespian way there. You rapscallion. And he's about to walk out the door until, like, an opportunity arises, doesn't it, Cal?
Yeah, and this is what animation-wise, this is one of my favourite scenes, just because when he's giving the sandwiches, everyone, like, looks at Mel as he's spitting out the things. Brilliant. And I can't remember his name, the sergeant guy, he's like, he flinches his hand back and doesn't take the sandwich, and everyone kind of, like, looks away from the sandwich. But yeah, it becomes Bart's big break, which kind of just sums up what anybody really does, is you're in the right place at the right time. And he gives him a chance to just say one line. Which, do you remember what line is?
I am waiting for a bus. And then he's going to get peppered with pies for the next 5 minutes there.
He gets as far as, I am waiting for a... And then wobbles and breaks everything.
I am waiting for a... I didn't do it.
Oh, man. It's a miracle we got through that one. Remind me never to let you on stage again, kid. Some people got it, some people don't. And you, my young friend, do not have... Hold on, I want to finish this thought outside.
It's that kid!
It's the I didn't do it guy!
He's mine! I own him! And all the subsidiary rights!
The set, the lights, everything else, and then, like, perfect timing, turns around, I didn't do it, and gangbusters, everyone's laughing there, and just the crowd, I just fallen in love with him there, and Oh, Krusty can't believe it. Bart can't even believe it himself. I'm trying to think of examples, but my mind's gone blank there. Can you remember, like, a star-making moment in a particular bit series or film or, like, a live interview where you think, oh, I love that. Oh, this guy's going to be something. Or this person's going to be something.
Yeah, there's this guy who does this podcast who says, hello and welcome to...
Don't.
It's hard to think, isn't it? Because you kind of... I don't know. It's going to sound really weird. I don't really watch soaps. I go through stages where I do watch soaps, but there's an actress on Emmerdale who's she's quite young. She's probably about, I don't know, she's early 20s, I'd say, maybe a little bit younger. But she is very, very good. And I think once she's kind of out of Emmerdale, I feel she's going to be quite big. She's very realistic. She's very... you know, she's just very better than what it does for her.
So she's going to go the way of Catherine Tilsley and that Something Lancaster, where they go from soap to doing serious BBC and ITV dramas.
Yeah, I think so. And the guy from Misfits as well. All these people I can't remember their names of. Who's in This Is England?
Stephen Graham.
No, not Stephen Graham.
Joe
Gillan? Gillam?
Yeah, that's it. Joe
Gillam, yeah. He was on Emmerdale, even, originally. I think it's just kind of like a rite of passage, isn't it, really? George Clooney was on ER, I think. Any Australian actor or actress was...
Has to do Neighbours, yeah.
Or Home and Away. Good old Harrison Ford. You know, he was in the right place at the right time. You've got fun facts about that?
Yes. Now, I couldn't remember, like, what career he did have beforehand, but you have informed me that it was a carpenter, and it wasn't on set. He was George Lucas's own carpenter there, and then did he just randomly pick him out for a role, or did he just have him audition like everyone else? I don't know the fine points, but I'm aware that he was a working actor and he also had this main job and he nailed it, and then he was in Star Wars, but I don't know the fine parts.
Yeah, from my understanding, he was... They needed like an everyman to be Han Solo, and he just kind of worked the role. He knew him well enough to know that he wanted to act as well, and just gave him the break, and you know, then history was made.
I will say it's a similar thing there, but if you want a very realistic performance from like an everyman, like genuine person there, look up behind the scenes of the Derek series that Ricky Gervais made, and you get to see Carl Pilkington acting, and he's as method as he is, because like he hasn't done it before, and he genuinely gets mad at this woman who just used a mum, and then the mum passes, and he tells her, oh, have you got the rings and all the stuff there? Well, fuck off then. And he said, he's admitting to Ricky and Kerry Goldman, no, but I was really angry. Yeah, but Carl, that's acting. You went into the, you know, the depths of despair and you showed up. No, but I was really annoyed for her there, because she was like screwing over her mum, and it's just the most pure, amazing thing there. And like, I've heard people talk about Carl Pilkin, oh, it's a whole act. If it is a whole act, then that's amazing commitment. That's Kaufman levels of brilliance there. Bart's had his big 15 minutes of fame there, and Crush saying, oh boy, I don't know what the hell you were thinking, buddy. Some people have it and some people don't. And you definitely don't. Wait a minute, I'll finish my thought outside. And the crowds, the masses of people. It's the I didn't do it, kid. Bart Starr's been made there. And you even get to see the nice touch of the cigar falling out of Crossy's mouth in shock. And a very real line. I own him and all the subsidiary rights. As we go to our final act break, folks, and oh, Jesus, this just reminds me of these young YouTubers there, or the YouTubing families. Have you heard of Ryan's Toy Club?
Yes.
Yes, and he's got his own Nickelodeon show, and I'm thinking, my God, it's just a matter of time before he just goes off on his own, or he divorces his parents.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Coleman. Yeah, like, it looks... Tell you what, he seems to be enjoying himself on set and that, and they make it a fun environment, but I'm thinking... Like, when he turns 12...
He's one overdose away from just divorcing his kids, his family. I, because, like, my partner, she doesn't have any like young people in her family. Like all the cousins and all like they shouldn't have any nieces and nephews or whatever. My niece was over the other day, and she was over as well, and she was watching. Like an advert came up for something what he was on, and I was just like, he makes more than we'll ever make in our entire life. Like it makes you sick. And he's like 4 or 5 or however old he is. It's disgusting.
Bart's busy capitalising on this, and so is Krusty there. They've got their new bit cow there, and essentially, you know, something goes wrong and I didn't do it. It's an easy copy and paste formula there. And Bart mania goes wild. There's dances, you know, everyone on the streets doing the catchphrase. Which kind of example is your favourite there of using the catchphrase in real life there? My one would be... Now, it was going to be Quimby getting his hole with another woman, but I think what's even better is Patty and Selma like, oh, who was smoking in this building? And it's not allowed. Oh, we didn't do it. And everyone laughing, and there's the man in the building burning to death going, help me.
Help, help. It is just the whole pain of like, help me, help, help.
Oh, and he's got everything, including a can't touch this kind of parody there. He's got his Vanilla Ice on there with I Didn't Do It. Bart chat with Barney as the replacement as well. I didn't do nothing. He's even got his own autobiography, which is, 2/3 of one autobiography and then part of the Olive North trial as well. Have you got any memories, or do you know any sort of really bad celebrity autobiographies?
It's all those YouTube ones, really. They're like 20 years old and they've already lived about 600 different lives and shit.
Oh, and half of it's like filling your own like dreamscape with some positive bollocks.
100%. There is some good ones out there. Some like Paul O'Grady's biography is really good.
Really? Because I know he's done a few. Yeah. What one is it?
It kind of, because I think he's done about 2 or 3, and it's really well wrote because it kind of like builds up from like his early life, and then how it ends. Is because Paul O'Grady, for any listeners who don't know, he's a presenter, I guess he's a presenter. Former comedian. He used to be a drag queen as well, called Lily Savage. Openly gay man who was married to a woman, because obviously being gay was not as okay as it was today. He was really close to his mother, but not so much obviously his dad and such. And how it ends, it really builds up to this kind of like that his mum's gonna die, and she's really ill, and eventually she does die. And as she's crying, as he's crying and like mourning his mother, his best friend, the only person who truly knew who he was, he gets a call from his I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend, I can't remember, saying that she's pregnant. And He'd finally come to accept that he were actually a gay man. And so then, the second part of it's the second book is dealing with like the outcome of that, and you know, and then going from there, really.
I find a lot of comedians' autobiographies, like, it's either end of the spectrum. It's either great or it's incredibly boring.
Mm-hmm.
I went through Rob Brydon's, and I was like, oh great, is he gonna get into like Gavin and Stacey, or what was that early BBC one, Jeff and something? But that's like in total about 5 pages of the book right at the end. But then the rest of it is like, oh, you know, I was a shy, awkward boy, but I sure did like the ladies. And he doesn't mention his ex-wife at all.
Yeah,
it's just like an opening forward saying, oh, we have come to terms and mutually parted ways, hence why I will not be. And I was like, okay then. Like, why? It just, that raises further more questions.
Yeah.
Michael Owen, don't bother, he's just a boring bastard. Honestly, like, no shame, big wrestling fan. Mick Foley, what a sweetheart, and such an amazing in-depth look at the wrestling business during the peak times there, his first autobiography. That's a big recommend there. And we get to, hell, the biggest meme from this episode now. Bart's realising, oh, like, oh, I don't know if I like this anymore, because everyone in his class is staring at him like a bunch of, you know, horrible, feckless gibbons. And he goes, oh, I, you know, hate to say this, but Shouldn't we be learning? And say the line, Bart, and I didn't do it. And rapturous applause and rapturous cheers, Cal. Do you have a favourite version of this meme? You must have.
It comes and goes, really, doesn't it? It depends on what's hot at the moment, and it's just kind of like, oh, like Resident Evil Big Lady. It's just like,
yes.
Do it. It's like, oh, you're, you know, don't sexualise a big woman. And it's like, yay!
my two favourites are, don't want to keep bringing it up, but Peep Show related one is Say the Line, Corrigan. Chance would be a fine thing. And then, of course, you remember Succulent Chinese Meal Man.
Oh.
It's that.
He's fantastic.
Because the thing is that it was a bit of bait and switch, because it starts with Say the Line, Say. And I just think, oh, is it going to be a Tobias one from the Australia episode?
Yeah.
It's an Aussie accent. But then you just see horribly pasted his face, and it's, this is Democracy Manifest. And I was like, oh, that's the best one. Yeah, I'd probably say that's my top one that I have seen of this meme. And Homer's trying to get in on the Ryan Toys Exploit Your Kids Act now. Come on, Lisa, say something. Bucka bucka, wooza wooza. And Lisa's saying, I want to be known for something worthwhile and not some obnoxious fad there. And Bart realises, oh, God, I am a meme, you know. I am a one-hit wonder there. And, well, hell, that's just kind of meme culture now. I mean, you look at TikTok and, you know, Ollie Ball, that's a most recent one there. Or, you know, way back in the day of Cash Me Outside Girl and loads of them now. But these people are able to, and like, you know, is it really talent and that? But these people are able to make money from cameos, you know,
yeah.
Twitch and that, Patreons and that. What do you think of the, this kind of D-list 15 minutes of fame culture and capitalising on it?
I think it's always good to capitalise on it. If you can make a bit of money on it, that's fine. But, like, you know, whenever these cameos come out, or, you know, it sometimes gets suggested on Facebook of, like, people. I've never done one paid for myself, but, like, I always try and find, I'm like, this person who's been in, like, who's not really been famous for at least 15 years, how much do they value what they can give? And, like, sometimes I'm like, okay, you know, this reality show star is doing, like, 20 quid. That's fine. I think that's okay. But then you look and then they'll have, like, a reunion show and it'll up the price to, like, 40 quid. The most I've seen is Caitlyn Jenner was about 1,200 quid for a video. My cousin's got a famous cat. What's a meme? You know, you might have seen it where it's like a, I think it's either the black cat, I think, and it's on a like a cat stand, like a big massive one, but it's leaning to the point where it's about to collapse, and it goes viral every so often. If you've seen that meme, that's my cousin's cat, it was stuck about 7 years ago now or so. But as of recently, she actually made money from it. She, Visa, not Visa, Visa. So Visa, they somehow tracked her down. They must have just, like, reverse searched the original image to the point where they found the original video, put it in, like, a small little, you know, like on Twitter, when you get, like, a little advert and it's kind of like things, one of those, and paid her, like, 250 quid, you know. So it helps. It does pay up, you know. It ain't a lot of money, but it's still 300. I got like 300 quid, just which they could have easily just took the fucking picture off the internet and done it. So if you do go viral, kids, don't you worry.
Bart even tries to sort of, you know, save his reputation by going on the Conan O'Brien show. There, very meta. Conan obviously writing on the Simpsons before and all that, and. You know, he just tries to put out this good fact of, you know, oh, there's these horrible bushfires in Kansas and it spreads as much as, oh, I just do the line, oh, fine. And then he just says, I won't do it. And this meme needs to get picked up more. Like, oh, we'll be right back. So perfectly still, only I may dance.
I saw something, a similar interview to this where, like, you know, they maybe play a bit of an idiot on TV, and so they get put onto onto some sort of, you know, chat show. What I usually see it on is Conan tends to do it really well and interviews them really well and kind of like lets them speak about it more, whilst people like Stephen Colbert, if he doesn't really know them or doesn't really research them very well, he doesn't really like, he comes across quite rude and quite unprepared. Like, I saw this one with Mac from fucking Always Sunny.
Oh yeah, Charlie. Oh yeah.
Yeah, Rob McAmurb. He's got a really weird name, but he was basically on two interviews compared to each other. And Stephen Colbert, he just kind of plays like, oh, you're just an idiot who just kind of like writes his thing. Do you think like some of the parts of your show come across as a bit like homophobic and stuff like that? And Rob Delaney, McElhaney, yeah, his mum's gay and his brother's gay as well, and he's a big supporter of like LGBTQ rights and stuff like that, and he completely schooled him, and he was just like, no, like, it's fine, you know, it is what it is. Whilst compared to with Conan, he's a lot more like relaxed, and he's a lot more like, as though they actually know each other and they actually care, not so much care about each other, but, you know, it's a better, more natural interview, whilst it's kind of like with Colbert, it's like, huh, you idiot, you don't know what you're on about. It's like, fuck off. I don't like Stephen Colbert, as you can possibly tell.
What I can't stand is, and it happens a lot with comedy actors and voice actors and such, is that they try and get him to perform.
Yeah,
like it's just like poking a stick. Come on, Seal, clap for us, and
yeah,
like most of them do it and don't mind doing it, but like every single time, like I'm sure Seth MacFarlane gets bored of it. I like Steve Coogan's approach to it, because there was a great point during I think it was during the Boris hearings where they're actually indicting him in court for his lies or whatever in 2020. And Steve Coogan Steve Coogan came on as, you know, if you know Steve Coogan, he's this very hard left-wing, massive socialist there. What a hero. And he said his real serious piece there, and he was very eloquent, very well-educated on the matter. Yeah. I didn't expect it from Channel 4, but then the fellow went, and what would Alan Partridge think of all this and what Boris is going through? Honestly, and he says it, what the character would say, and he didn't even put on the voice. He goes, well, I think Alan Partridge just completely steer clear of it, because he's completely ignorant to it, and he'd just try and go off on his own personal project about, I don't know, rambling in the Norfolk Dales. And then there was a massive, pregnant, awkward pause, and he realised, well, fuck, I can't keep asking him to do the voice. So he goes, Steve Coogan, thank you for your time. Just perfect, perfect way of addressing that. I kept rewatching that clip. It's amazing. Bart's now thinking, oh hell, is this what my life is going to be like? And then we get a flash forward kind of dream sequence thing. And I have in my notes, oh my god, this is fucking Futurama. And this, I was like, this is a precursor. Why have I never put two and two together before? From the tubes to that host in the little fish glass head thing as well. Do you think Matt Groening always had that idea, or do you think this spurred on Futurama and this is him
I think he definitely always had the idea, and it's kind of a part of really being part of sci-fi culture of just like heads in floating bottle, you know, bottles and shit like that, like, so, but I think it was definitely him tooling it a little bit to try and tease it. The sad thing about it is that obviously we're closer to that date than we are to the original episode day.
Oh my god, we are. Jesus. Cal, no!
Which is, a little bit weird. A little bit. it's just going to get to the point, isn't it? Like, there's all YouTube videos, the little video essays about explaining how aging at Bart, you know, Homer, to the point where he was a teenager in the 90s, works canonically with the episode, even though, like, obviously he was in university and, you know, he went to college in the 70s, 80s, time kind of thing. But it just makes sense with the timeline of just keeping Bart 8, got Bart 10 and Lisa 8, really.
I'm only getting to grips with the fact that this year, Phoenix Knights and WrestleMania 17, the best WrestleMania, are now 20 years old. I'm not ready for this, Cal, still.
I went to one of my friend's house the other week, and she's got a son who's like 16 or stuff, and he's a bit of a gamer, so I was chatting to him. I was asking, like, what games is he playing and stuff. And he was just like, oh, yeah, I've been playing that classic, that old game, Assassin's Creed. And I was just like, fuck, I remember when that came in. I was just like, go burn yourself.
Bart's refusing to do his latest crusty appearance there. Crusty's sweating. But Marge makes the point of, you know, you might not like it and that. You might be growing tired of it, but you have to realise that you are making a lot of people happy there, and that means a hell of a lot. And so, I could miss out this meta joke of, you know, oh, repetitiveness is my job, and the best performance ever there. Just, I know what they're going for, but I personally didn't like it. So he ends up rushing to Krusty Lou Studios there, and he's making it. And now, Krusty, with a great line as well, here he is, to do his one thing that you all love, like the rabid dogs you are. Here he is, the I didn't do it kid. And then Bart, with full piss and vinegar, delivers his line. And people are just fed up with it now, Cal. Just apathy and just no noise. Bart even tries to switch up with Homer's suggestion, wuzzle wuzzle. And a lot of rabble rabble. And then, is that what constitutes for communism? These days, wuzzle wuzzle? And the Krusty show is put on hiatus for retooling. The dream is seemingly over, Cal.
Yeah.
Can you think of, like, very meteoric rise and falls in comedy or celebrity that are very notable?
Have you got any off the top of your head? There's a few TV...
I'd say Vanilla Rice for one.
Yeah, for sure. Game of Thrones as a show, you know, that ended so terribly, it tarnished the history of the rest of the show, really.
Line of Duty's done that recently as well.
Yeah, it did.
I never watched the series, but why?
No.
I don't get why that's a common thing now of modern shows shitting the beds, or they can't finish it.
I did this kind of, like, ending. We both know endings are really bad, really hard to do anyway, but to get anything what's satisfied. But my argument is, with any ending, if you're as a viewer, if you cannot think of any other ending what can better it, then it's the best ending they could do. Obviously, Breaking Bad has a very satisfying ending, 6 Feet Under and such. But, like, just in general, they're just really, really hard to do. But there's you can do a basic kind of, like, okay ending, or especially when you become, like, for example, with Marvel, if kind of, like, fans get behind it so much, it kind of almost ruins the ending. Like, the ending for WandaVision, which I'll not spoil for anyone who's not had a chance to watch it yet, the show itself is great. It starts out really good because it's the whole concept of it is a mystery box. You know, people started trying to work it out, this little triangle here means one thing and another. And it got to the point where, like, the creators and Marvel had to come out and be like, if you don't stop fan theorying, it's gonna ruin the ending for you. It's not gonna live up to your expectations. You need to calm it down. And it didn't. It's fine. Like, the ending, like, I think I was disappointed personally from it because I kind of jumped on the bandwagon of, like, here's what all it could do. Oh. And I feel like if I rewatched it, I didn't hate it, but I just didn't. It kind of fell a bit short, really. But it's, you know, that's just part of the gimmick, you know. I can't think of any actors really who just kind of or massive fall to fame. Well, I guess a lot of them are just kind of.
I just remembered. I'll bring this up now because I did whole research just for this one part of the show. Cara Delevingne.
Has she been cancelled?
Oh no, she's not been cancelled. It's just the media and Hollywood tried to make her a property, and just the buy rates and the actual return on investments and the profits and that didn't measure up with their appearances and such, you know, Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Paper Towns, a few things, that Valorian series.
Yeah. Jai Courtney as well. Jai Courtney's kind of had like a bit of a renaissance though.
I did some deep diving on Cara Delevingne, and you know, it's her family's in blue when you look on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And she's related to like countesses and such there. And they have so much so power or influence or money that they were, I think the grandfather, paid the Daily Mail and the Guardian to just write showbiz articles on her and pat her in the streets back in 2012. And if you look at the original comments on these articles, it's of regular Guardian visitors saying, oh, who is this girl they keep featuring? I have no idea who she is.
Yeah.
And you can track it, and it's just really incredible and a bit scary as well that you can just pick someone to be the girl there. Fascinating stuff, Carl. Again, it was another rabbit hole for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's like it's the whole South Park idea, like with Britney Spears, where this person gets chosen to be famous and shit. Look at fucking the guy from Avatar who was in everything between the 2010. I saw a meme about Avatar earlier. It's so funny. It's just like it was like a man, muscular, big muscular man. It was just like comes into the film box office, becomes the most famous film of all, best selling film of all time. People can't even quote a single line from it.
Other than that Sigourney Weaver line of like, oh, don't play with that because you'll go blind. Get it? Because your tail's a dick.
I that's more than I can remember.
I completely forgot. I just beat myself out. So Bart's home there. Krusty's booted him out. You know, you go from being the most important guy in the world to some schmo running a box factory. I heard that. Bart is back home. Marge says, oh, well, you know, you didn't set the world on fire there, but at least you have your memories. At least you had your time in the sun. And, you know what? A nice ending. I like the ending. Talked about meta stuff all the way throughout. Lisa goes, oh, at least now you'll be remembered for something substantial and not just a silly catchphrase. And machine gun rate of a lot of, well, majority of the popular Simpsons catchphrases. Doe, Marge's grumble there. Excellent. Heidely-ho. Flanders. My favourite and yours, Cal. Surprised didn't get Wiggum in with a little rare.
Yeah.
And then we go to Lisa. What's she going to pull out of the bag? What's her gimmick?
If anybody wants me, I'll be in my room.
She pulls a Coogan. I appreciate that. And she does go off there with conviction. Homer just didn't put up with it. What kind of cat? What kind of phrase is that? What kind of gimmick is that? Yeah, that is how we end it. Is this a strong ending for you? What do you think of them all coming together and being quite meta?
It's nice. It's a nice full circle. It's like a palate cleanser episode, really, isn't it? Like, it's harmless. Nothing happens, which kind of alters the status quo. There's a few nice callbacks in regards to, you know, it isn't Bart's first run-in with Krusty, and he should know better. And it kind of, you know, the meta-ness of like, okay, whatever. But you gave me this Danish, like, cheers, you know. So personally, it's a fine episode. It's not. I wouldn't reach out to watch it again, but on the other, you know, if it was on, I'd have a few laughs of it. In regards to ratings and stuff, probably I'd give it a solid 3 out of 5 human conversion of boxers. Mimic type people. just because it's, you know, it's a solid joke. You know, there's a joke at the end where it's just like, you'll just end up like that guy. And if like the box guy's just looking out the window, it's like, hey. You know, there's nice little gimmicks here and there. Obviously, there's the big meat. It's more of a diamond in a rough, which is mean on the episode, but you know, it is what it is. What about yourself?
I completely agree with you there. This is a I'd say it's solid, you know. Like you, it's all right there. I did like parts of it there. I just wish there was a few more, you know, gags in there, or they gagged up the start of it there. Really enjoyed the box factory. I wanted that box owner fella to come back. It's a shame he didn't. Just the voice and the whole character there, just boring bastard. I like the whole satire of it. I think they did it really well. But yeah, I just wanted more, Cal. Yeah, I just wanted more from the episode, more gags. You know, just something else about it there. And for that reason, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 non-box related programming.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good.
Sounds good.